to MUFON Canada's UFO Primer. I'm Dave Palachuk, National Director of MUFON Canada and Executive Producer of MUFON Canada's podcast. MUFON is the world's largest and oldest civilian UFO investigative and research organization with members in many countries around the world. Our number one goal is to be the inquisitive mind's refuge seeking answers to the most ancient question, are we alone in the universe? Simple answer is no. Do you have UFO reports to share, armchair UFO investigator aspirations, or want to train and join our investigative team? MUFON is here for you. Will you please join us in our quest to discover the truth? What do we know after 50 years of MUFON? One, UFOs are real. UFOs represent advanced technology not from any country on planet Earth. Two, we are not alone in the universe. We never have been. Three, according to the data we collect, our universe is teeming with life. And four, the UFO phenomenon is worthy of scientific study because tremendous breakthroughs will result if we allow our scientists and engineers to do so without fear of ridicule. Each episode will feature a guest host along with our very special guests who are willing to disclose their knowledge on ufology. Hope you enjoy the information you hear in this podcast and use it to help decide if you believe. Embrace the future with MUFON Canada. Welcome to MUFON Canada's UFO Primer. I'm Dave Palachuk, the National Director of MUFON Canada, and we have a very special guest today. In keeping with our historical Canadian cases, today we're looking at the Clan Lake incident in Northwest Territories on June 22nd, 1960. And with us today is Mikey McBrien. You might know him from Buffalo Air in Northwest Territories, a TV show that was on the air and ended about 4 or 5 years ago. He got interested in it, and he wanted to go up and check this all out, and guess what? He did just that. So, Mikey, you are on, and welcome to the show, to MUFON Canada's UFO Primer.
Well, first off, Dave, thanks for having me. This is awesome. It's good to talk about something that isn't necessarily about airplanes, so I'm excited about it.
Well, it is flying unit.
Yeah, it is. Still flying. Always about airplanes, but it's a little bit not so much airplanes, so I'm pretty excited.
I'm pretty sure it's about an airplane that you'd love to fly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Me too. So tell us about Clan Lake, the history of Clan Lake for our viewers, and then why you wanted to get involved.
Well, I guess the whole story kind of thing is, you mentioned I was on a TV show, Ice Pilots, that ended in about 2015. And then since 2015 to, you know, last 5 years, I've been doing various multimedia things, documentary movies, and I started up a YouTube channel, and we saved a DC-3 and all this stuff. So after this all happened, we're getting into the summer now of 2020, I was doing various YouTube videos and that kind of stuff, but I was actually sitting here watching a YouTube video, or a YouTube channel called It's Redacted, a new channel out of the States that goes into declassified military documents. Mm-hmm. And I was just randomly watching because, you know, I have an interest in ufology, and especially anything aircraft related, especially if it's defying what we think the physical laws are. Regardless, so I was sitting there just like anybody else watching YouTube, and they mentioned that there was this incident in Clan Lake, Northwest Territories. And of course, I live in Northwest Territories, and that Northwest Territories never really comes up. We're basically the forgotten stepchild of Canada. So anytime anybody even mentions Northwest Territories, it piques my interest. Now, Northwest Territories UFO incident, and I'm like, okay, this is awesome. So I looked it up, and Clan Lake is only about 30 miles north of where we are here in Yellowknife. So I was like, I got to figure out more what this is, regardless of what it is. Even if it was somebody lost a tire off a truck, at least it's in the Northwest Territories. Like, during this bubble right now, we can do something. So I went in and pulled up all the documents of June 22nd, 1960. And it actually is quite a bit of stuff. Like, there's like the RCMP documents, the Department of Defense. And basically what happened was there was two prospectors that were dropped off somewhere in Clan Lake. We don't know where exactly. That's part of the mystery. But they witnessed something strike the water, and what they believe, the object was spinning in the water, basically like a spoke. They call it a wheel with spokes, or, you know, kind of what aviation, we're kind of thinking like a prop. But yeah. Something hit the water and was spinning and actually was had momentum and then started slowing down, like boom, 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 boom.
That alone would pretty well rule out a meteorite, because they don't spin and they would...
Yeah. It's interesting because, as you know, eyewitnesses are sometimes very good and sometimes they'll describe something that may or may not have happened. So this is interesting because he was 1,700 feet away. Okay, now this is the documents here. So he reports that he was 1,700 feet away and he saw it hit the lake, spin, and he said it was between 4 and 6 feet in diameter, you know, size of a prop. But really, it could be anything. And he said that he didn't see any steam, and he, like, again, 1,700 feet away, the wave of the impact actually reached the shore. So, you know, he had a direct line of sight, so he wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, seen it over some stuff. He saw it directly. And prospectors know distances. These guys stake claims, and they're in the bush, you know, making properties for mining companies. These guys know. So if he says 1,700 feet away, you know, it's pretty damn close.
It's pretty accurate, eh? Okay, that's good to know.
So the whole thing is what the heck was it? So the Department of Defense, they come out and say it's a meteorite. Most likely, if you're to go through all the stuff without making any assumptions, like if it was, say, a prop coming off an airplane, you're going to have an airplane fly over. You're going to have a prop come off. You're going to have the prop hit the water. You're going to have that prop have enough momentum, not just to disintegrate, but to actually sit there running. So
I find that hard to believe it could be a prop. Yeah.
You need fuel. You need a whole bunch of stuff because, you know, if a prop comes off, it's not going to be spinning. Once it hits the water, it's going to go pop, 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 pop. You could watch 100 YouTube videos.
I think it would probably break up and he'd see that.
There would be debris.
Yeah.
You know, if it was an airplane, my girlfriend Stella believes it could have been a drone, which makes a little bit more sense because they had target drones in the 50s, basically mini airplanes. And it would, if it hit the lake, especially if it was going slow, it would have enough fuel, energy, and stuff for that engine to keep on running.
Did the prospectors ever report sounds? Because you would have heard a drone coming in.
So they actually heard a sound that went for about 20 minutes. They've heard sounds of aircraft overhead. And, you know, as they heard a sound get louder before the impact. Now, because we actually went out there, we haven't even brought that part up. So we went out there and we shot a YouTube video and you can check it out. And there's airplanes nonstop. Because it is a flight corridor between Yellowknife and a lot of the mining, fishing, camping, and all that stuff, especially during the day when there's nonstop aircraft flying over that lake. So hearing airplane noises definitely is something not out of the usual. Now you could think, well, 1960, couldn't have been that many airplanes. There was actually more flying in 1960 in that area than there is today.
I was going to say, that's the height of the prospecting and the mining. But you know what? The fact that, you know, you're saying, there's lots of airplanes, people are going to rule out everything, say, oh, it was an airplane. But being, you know, MUFON Canada and all investigations, airplanes attract UFOs. And that's a hope for me. That puts it on a positive note that they could have been tracking flights in the air. So that doesn't rule out, you know, unidentified anything, UFO, UAP, whatever, because they are attracted to airplanes. We know that for a fact. We've studied it. It's been documented. So that gives me actually hope.
Yeah, it's you got to remember, too, the U.S. military was all over the area at the time. This is the getting to the height of the Cold War in the 1960s. Actually, the beginning of the height of the Cold War,
right.
The dew line, the distant early warning system, was all through that area. In fact, there's listening stations in my hometown of Hay River. It's about 120 miles south of us right now. So it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. So there was, you know, a huge amount of U.S. presence. You know, there was satellites dropping out of the sky. I think it was 1976. There was a Soviet nuclear satellite that broke apart above like Fort Smith in Pine Point and actually put radioactive debris. So like a lot of this stuff is not out of the question, especially the Russian. Like in fact, the U-2, they crashed a U-2 spy plane in like Saskatchewan a few months earlier. Wow. So like this is like there's so much activity. So that's the beautiful thing about this. It really could be anything. And it's so weird. I found a news article that was done in 2010 when all this data dump, so all this reporting finally became public. It was about 10 years ago, all the reports that we based everything off of. And Tim Edwards, who is a reporter here in Yellowknife, he actually reached out and found the cop who was, I believe, in his 80s at the time, or late 70s, that actually wrote this report. And talk to him, and you can actually find it on the link of the video. I put a link to the story, and he said that he doesn't remember the prospector's name. Of course, it's redacted. If you look at the thing, any of the names are redacted. Hence the YouTube channel Redacted. That kind of rebroke the story, I should say. This stuff was all here, but that's, again, the beautiful thing about that show Redacted is because it's kind of reintroduces a whole bunch of stuff. So anyway, he didn't really remember the name of the prospector, but he did remember he was older. So 1960, older, most likely not with us anymore. Right. So there is a kind of ongoing kind of investigation here in Yellowknife that we're trying to find more information because it's a small town. My father would have been in Yellowknife at the time. He would have been about 14 years old. The funny thing is my father's flown and grew up in Gordon Lake, which is only about 30 miles north of this incident. He's never heard of it. Oh. So this story wasn't news when it happened. It kind of was kind of not even folklore, not even a legend. The only time people ever heard of it was about 10 years ago when Tim Edwards did this article on it, when the data dumped. So it's kind of strange that it was kind of top secret. Because, again, anything that weird happens, you know, they go to the bar, you tell stories, it just grows and grows and grows. This is kind of something that was hidden. And so to me, that is a very cool part of it, too. So
makes it all that more authentic, too, because as you're pulling out the documents now, they haven't been play with. The story hasn't grown, as you said. It's not become folklore. So, like I said earlier before we got on, I had never heard of Clan Lake until, I guess, the same article. And then I didn't really read a lot about it until I found your YouTube video, which I will put a link to in ours so people can go watch it. Because I got to admit, you did an awesome job. I love the photography. I am a photographer. I loved how you presented it and stuff. And you left a lot of unanswered, you know, questions, which is good. So let's talk about the fact that you did go up there. Let's get into your little adventure.
So yeah, it's about 30 miles north here. It's on a very small, shallow lake, which is a little bit on the dangerous side when it comes to flow planes, because you got to land on the lake. You could theoretically take a helicopter, but that would be crazy expensive.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have float planes available here at Buffalo Airways. My father flies them or owns them and flies them, so he, you know, we didn't have to pay too much for that.
I have a feeling that whenever you want to go somewhere, you just run out and say, "Dad, I'm taking a plane," and off you go, which seems what you used to do in the show anyways, you know.
Yeah, and my father's always up for adventure, and especially that's where he grew up in that area. So and the fact that he's never heard of it was cool.
Your father being,
so I got a group of
your father being Joe, right? And Joe went with you, didn't he? He went with you.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, keep going.
He didn't stay out there, but he dropped us off. And then, so you get a mix between the YouTube video and the logistics of getting out there. It takes a whole day to get out there, get packed, get everything going, get your tent up, and all that stuff. And it takes up half a day to, you know, to take your tent apart, get it up, load the airplane, get the airplane back. So you're about 2 days of packing, unpacking, and stuff like that. So we were basically there for 3 days, but only 1 day of filming.
Right.
And if you've watched any, well, of course, this demographic watching this, you've watched probably a lot of UFO documentaries, Bigfoot documentaries, Loch Ness. I love the Loch Ness Monster. They never find it.
Messy.
You, like, as a director producer and stuff, you got to have story in there, because if I was to go out and film a Bigfoot documentary, if you find Bigfoot, don't matter about the documentary, you're going to be on the cover of every single newspaper.
Right.
And yeah, so the fact that the documentary was made, you already know that they didn't find anything. That's just from a physical point
like
of view,
like a
right?
lot of the TV shows we all watch and wait to see if they find something, but it keeps going season after season after season.
Yeah, and that it's not a bad thing, but it is a story issue. So when right. I knew that going out to Klein Lake, I'm going to be either find something right away, and the YouTube video doesn't matter because you would be on CBC saying you solved the 60-year-old mystery. Mm-hmm. But so realistically, you know something, you're not going to find something, at least off the bat. So you got to kind of think, okay, what can I do to educate everybody in this scenario? So I focused more on cinematography, reenactment of the initial incident, going through the documents, showing where everything is, and trying to be as transparent as possible so the viewer can make a decision on what they think, what happened, where did it happen, and that kind of stuff. So I was more focused on putting that into a thing. So while you're sitting at home watching, you are now part of the story to figure out what do you think it happened. Because mm-hmm. the mystery is always better than the solution.
Of course.
If you find the solution,
let's end the story.
Yeah, like if Bob Lazar took my hand and brought me to S4 and showed me the thing, then it's over.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, okay.
But you did a great job educating. I mean, like, I watched that video twice because I said, wow, look at everything I'm learning. It's better than what I saw in the documents. And so, you know, I guess the question is, continuing on, going up there and you do solve it, is one, is that okay with you and that's your goal? Because as you said, that's the end of the story, but that would be awesome if you solved it.
Oh yeah, no, that's always, and that's why
everybody
still goes in the bush and looks for Bigfoot, or they do this.
Of course.
Because it's always there. You're chasing that dragon, right?
Yeah, that dragon.
But I knew because of Klein Lake, because we had short enough time, we didn't have any equipment, and really we were in a time crunch. That lake is frozen solid right now. Like probably not solid, but like 8 or 9 inches of ice.
Yeah.
So I knew that to get the story out there, the video is almost like a commercial to see, hey, this is something that happened. Here it is. We have people and the ability to go out there. Let's go back.
An incredibly long trailer.
Yeah, basically. So that's when I hooked up with Jason at MUFO on there.
Yep.
And he might be able to get access to some magnetometers.
Yes.
Because if you read the report, the RCMP, the Space Agency, and the Department of Defense all recommended going out there with magnetometers. And it's kind of funny, if you read the reports, the guy that had the magnetometer in Yellowknife was in Morocco on vacation.
Oh.
So they couldn't use it.
Bad timing.
And then, of course, the next year, there's always problems. And you know, the incident didn't hurt anybody. There's no damage. It's just an intellectual mystery. So I can see how they just moved on, because there's a lot.
All right. How did you end up hooking up with Jason, my national chief investigator?
On the YouTube, I highly recommend watching the YouTube video the channel Redacted that actually got this.
Right.
They actually named Jason in the video and showed his Twitter.
Oh.
So it was that simple. Here's the guy that I should talk to.
So you do know, you do know what he does for a living, his job.
Yeah. I know. He flies drones.
Yeah, he's our drone pilot over mining. Right? He has all the tools. I've seen his drones. He's up in T-Bay, Thunder Bay, Ontario. So as I was saying, Jason is our National Chief Investigator. So the media, I guess when you contacted him, he called me right away. And that's how I've been sitting here listening and waiting for something. And then the YouTube video came out. And we're here to help you because, that's what MUFON Canada does. And I have nobody in Northwest Territories. You want to be an investigator?
We have 51. The funny thing is my sister Mm-hmm. My sister Kathy is a huge, actually, a fan of MUFON and all the investigation, and she wants to become an investigator.
You're going to have her call me because I need somebody up there. I've got 51 troops now across Canada. We've expanded like crazy. We have meetings every quarterly on Skype, of course, and we've continued to push, you know, education to the public and transparency. But I'd love to have somebody up north somewhere because then it would give me an excuse to fly up and meet them. But yeah, have her call me. We'll train her, and she has to pass a test and do training, but I'm always looking for people. Actually, we have 51 in the group right now, but we have 14 studying, so we're really expanding. And of course, this is the year of hopefully disclosure, which I know you being interested in ufology, you'd be hoping for. So you went to Clan Lake. Before you tell us what your next steps is, tell me why you are interested in ufology. Have you ever seen a sighting or had an experience of some sort?
Well, actually, this is, I'm pretty excited, as you can see, because I've never actually been able to talk in this subject. I don't really have anything crazy to disclose, but because I'm always surrounded by airplanes, no one ever really wants to hear me talk about UFOs. So it all kind of started, I got a book when I was a little kid about the Loch Ness Monster, and I was really fascinated about the Loch Ness Monster because it was just something that people didn't know. You always think adults know everything when you're a kid. And so here is a mystery, right? And I always was fascinated about it, that there's something big that could be hidden that adults didn't know. So growing up, I always had that fascination. And then when it got more into aircraft, you learn about the SR-71 Blackbird. Now, the SR-71 Blackbird, if you don't know, is the world's fastest jet-propelled aircraft. It is amazing. It was built it was designed in the late 50s, around the same time as Clan Lake, flew in the 60s, and to this day, in 2020, supposedly is the fastest air induction engine.
Better than Mach. Yeah, better than Mach 3, but it's kind of almost like a rocket anyways, but it's incredible. Yeah. And it still flies today. They still have a few.
No, they don't fly. I think...
Did they mothball the last one?
Yeah, in the 90s. NASA had some for high altitude testing.
Yeah, but I heard rumor that they still have one flying for that same reason. NASA still has one available.
There's not one flying. The F-117s, there's rumors that the F-117 Nighthawk has been flying for the last few years, and now at Nellis Air Force Base, they got pictures of it flying. But regardless, in 1999, I was at the Pima Air and Space Museum. My father and my brother and my uncle went down there. We were test flying a turbine DC-3. So we had some time off. I went down to the museum, and that's the first time I actually seen a Blackbird, and they have one there on display. Mm-hmm. So this is amazing. So there was a guy out there doing tours. So there's like a tour tram that goes around, and when you stop there, he would tell you about the airplane. And he actually worked on the photography, because it's basically a satellite. It would fly over the Soviets and take pictures. And then there was cameras.
A giant spy plane.
Yeah, basically. And of course, that's why he got retired, because the satellites, So he was control of the camera system and developing all the footage. And of course, where did he work? Area 51.
Of course.
So that's where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. And up until that point, I did a lot of studying on the Blackbird, the U-2, the F-117, the B-2, and all this stuff, mostly Lockheed. Kelly Johnson at Skunk Works worked with the CIA to develop the airplanes. They used Groom Lake, Area 51, Paradise Ranch to test fly these airplanes because they didn't want anybody to see them. So I knew all this, and I knew what about Area 51 and all that stuff. Not so much about the alien side, but from the legitimate Kelly Johnson test flying with Lockheed. And, of course, we operate Lockheed aircraft. So I didn't even think about the alien part of it. I've heard of Bob Lazar, and all that stuff just seemed really weird to me, because when I talked to the photographer, he said the place was boring. They called it Paradise Ranch just to, as a joke and all that stuff. And you basically lived in ATCO trailers and you weren't allowed to talk to anybody and there's no aliens there and blah, 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 blah. So I kind of thought I had the inside. So I wasn't too concerned about the alien part. And because if you really want to learn about Area 51, actually learn about the Blackbird and U2 program, because they talk about Area 51 as just an airport. It's not sensationalized and all that stuff. So that's kind of the camp I was in up until the Bob Lazar story started coming back, especially that, you know, from 89 to, you know, to now, that his story never changed, you know, the lie detector test. And I started looking into that, especially that the latest Bob Lazar documentary by
Jeremy Corbell.
Yeah, Jeremy Corbell. So I started looking more into that side of it. And I talked to a buddy of mine that worked on the B2 program, where they, the Rosenberg principle. Anyway, there's a sphere, this metal kind of thing that stops EMP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're making the skin of the B2, and it's got these fibers in it, and it stops the EMP. So he actually worked on that at Burbank. All this whole stuff, and then learning about how the compartmentalization works, where you could be working on something and the guy next to you, you're not allowed to talk to, blah, 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 blah. So that all fits into the Bob Lazar story. So I kind of started leaning a little bit more to, hey, this S4 program, if there was crash retrieval aircraft, this is exactly what they would do. Of course, the progress would be insanely slow because they're not allowed to talk to each other. The whole experimentation doesn't work. So that's how I kind of got into this whole mess. So then, you know, as an observer, and then as Klan Lake happened, like the thing, that's when I jumped in and said, hey, if there's something here, it could be anything. Let's go check it out.
Wow. Now, that's an incredible background, having an aviation background and learning about, you know, Groom Lake and, you know, yeah, the Pleasure Ranch or whatever, that's a joke too, but Bob Lazar, and the only comment I want to make on Bob Lazar is I've always sat on a fence with him personally, but what happened with the New York Times admitting, you know, like, hey, we do have a UFO, basically. Well, that just exonerated any fraud and hoaxes of Bob Lazar. He's been telling the truth the whole time, so more of that to come very soon, thanks to Marco. There's U.S. Senator who's going to be pushing it. So you got into ufology. That's great. That's an interesting way of getting into it. So you haven't had a sighting. You haven't had an experience. But you're out there investigating. See, you make a perfect field investigator there, Mikey. Definitely want to talk to your sister. So, yeah, she was on the show too, wasn't she?
She was on the show.
So you went up there. You did a day of exploratory research, basically. Mm-hmm. You checked the whole place out. I know in the video, and I don't want to give it away because I want people to go watch it. But you basically checked out all the known facts and tried to figure out where it could have happened, which is great. Now, in the video, you also said you're going back. Now, we know it's frozen right now. This is the middle of winter, and this will be up in a week or so it'll still be frozen. Tell me what it is you're going to do and when you hope to do it.
So we're hoping to go back in probably middle of spring, which is basically the summer everywhere else in the world.
It'll still be frozen.
Yeah, well, you gotta be able to land there.
Yeah.
In a couple hours, I'm going to be talking to a diver that's going to go out there, hopefully in January. He's got another show. It's called, like, Stuff I Found Diving. I believe it's on Northwest Television. You could probably find it online. I'm going to learn more about it just a bit. So he's going to go out there and dive sometime in January because he can get out there with snow machine. So, yeah, around that time, I think their production schedule for their TV show is a few months. So it would probably be around the same time I go back as his stuff airs, unless he finds something, of course.
Yep.
So, yeah, so there's a whole bunch of interesting thing. And really the cool thing is because it's so close to Yellowknife. You know, I was fascinated with Roswell the whole day after Roswell stuff and how the secrecy, like, of course, they lied. Even if it was some guy drunk or rolled his Jeep in the bush, they lied about it. Regardless. So there's just the whole thing of really whatever it was something that they don't want you to know. Could be something simple. Could be something complicated. We don't know, but that's the fun part of it. Is
swamp gas and weather balloons? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Swamp gas. That's an interesting one. There's that one guy that came up with that swamp gas. Hey, didn't he later on just that was the most regretful thing he said?
Yep. Let's not get into that. That's another whole story. U.S. person, what? Of course, military. But anyways. So you're going back and you said you wanted to take a drone or two and some I guess, measuring devices and things. So tell us what you're going to do and why.
Yeah. So first off, with Jason with MUFON, really want to bring him on, and that's why I wanted to come talk to you on the podcast here too. Is that MUFON? You guys are the leading experts in this stuff. You guys are not like the out there crazy saying, nope. You know, this is Bill from Zeta Reticula operating this, you know, triangular aircraft that is this model, and you know, the like Joe Biden's son's laptop.
We are the oldest scientific research and investigation group in the world. We're over 1,000 strong investigators almost now, and over 50 years old. And you're right. Okay, so we don't wear tin hats. Laugh at tin hats. Yeah, in the background, you can't see it because I'm not live. I'm just using my picture as my little friend Bob Jr., which is my little alien, because you got to also have to have a little bit of humor to go through this. You're right. So I appreciate the fact that you did contact us because, we have over 100,000 cases in our database right now, and we're about to embark on a world database with all the groups. And that'll be announced very soon. I definitely want to put whatever you do into this in reference to the YouTube and stuff. I mean, if you find something and it turns out to be not of this world, we definitely want to put that in the database. So I'll talk to you about that another time, how we do a report. But you're going to go up and Jason's got some equipment. We're hopefully going to get to you. You're going to go up and you're going to measure some things. What are you going to measure? Yeah. Tell everybody what you're doing.
So I'm not an expert, but Jason and you guys are, and that's kind of a reason inviting Jason out there is you guys have your whole MUFON procedure. I know you guys have your field manual tests and make sure that that is scientifically, if you do find something, it is reputable. And so that's kind of a safety thing. I want Jason up there because it is not only just a cool camping trip, it is, a chance to find something. Now, something that is out of this world could literally be the most easiest answer. Unfortunately, a meteorite, still out of this world.
Yes.
But it is something that came in from somewhere else and was very weird. Or, say, if it was a piece of an airplane, a piece of a UFO, could be anything, could be a pipe. Could be, somebody kicked a load out of an airplane. There could be a prop off an airplane. Most likely, it's metal.
Right.
And what is metal? It is magnetic. So you need a magnetometer to go out there and figure it out. Because if it is a chunk of iron from space, or if it's a chunk of aluminum from the Russians, right? We've got to go out there and figure it out. And the magnetometer is our best bet to do it. And so, that's kind of how it is. When we went out there to Clan Lake, I don't have a piece of paper with me. Oh, here, one sec. I just want to show you guys just like a quick diagram. Hopefully this comes out here. So the real reason I went to Clan Lake with this, the expedition, is because on Google Earth, you can't really see much. The resolution in the Northwest Territories is very, very low.
Yeah.
So to go out there, we flew out there with the airplane, took pictures. That's not good enough. You got to kind of go out on the lake and kind of map it out. So the lake is it's shaped kind of like this, like almost like brass knuckles.
Oh, okay.
And so when you read the, I don't know if you guys could see that, but you read the reports, it mentions that it crashed on the east side of Clan Lake. So I know it's on the east side. Mm-hmm. And it crashed near a cove where there was a built-up grass away from the shore. So these three things here are coves, 1, 2, and 3. So we had 1, 2, 3. We knew that he was 1,700 feet away. So you got to draw a 1,700-foot radius around each possible spot, then all that stuff. So the YouTube video, I go in there and I figure out most likely if this was a crime scene, where it would have happened. So we go through and say, okay, is this the best spot? Is this the best spot? Is this the best spot? Because when you go out there with better equipment, you can focus your energy on more likely stuff. You don't want to be down here.
You did know where he was, the prospector, right? So that makes it the one.
No.
No? Oh, I thought you knew where he was.
No, we know roughly where he is because of the documents. It doesn't give you a lot and long. Clan Lake, luckily, is pretty small. And that, to me, was the cool part, is the mystery of where he was on the lake. Because if you're looking for a 6-foot diameter object in a 3-mile lake, it's going to be a little bit difficult, especially the way we're doing it, because we didn't have time to get equipment by, with our eyes and a magnet and all that stuff. Jason can come there with a drone, you know, with a mapping pattern, we can do it.
Super.
So that's the real thing. And for the YouTube video, I go in, I go through the priest report, and I actually make like a unsolved, the 90s unsolved mystery. You know how they used to reenact stuff?
Yeah, you did that good.
Yeah, I kind of did that with shaky camera and all that kind of stuff. And so I did that, and then through the documents. So if you watch the video, you could be, you could be in 13 minutes, you could become basically an expert on that. So taking what we've learned, and I wanted to put it out there, all the stuff, I could be wrong. I could be reading these reports completely differently. So I put out all the things there for people to, all the links underneath the video to actually read the documents yourself, go through it, double check my homework, just like a teacher, and say, hey, am I on the right track? So that's why the MUFON community, my normal aviation people that watch my show, they just want to be entertained. They want to see an airplane. That's me too, right? But you guys, with you guys' background and your focus, energy, and your love of this subject, you can actually go through and see if there is more clues hidden in these 22 documents.
Right.
Not a much, but that's what I want for this podcast too. If you're, if you got this far in the podcast and you're watching this and you're interested to know more about Clan Lake, please go through the documents, reach out to me and see, is there something that I'm missing? Can you use this time where you're stuck at home to go through this and help us solve this mystery? Because it's up to all of us to figure it out.
And I hope you're okay with this. If somebody has something they really want to contribute, they could make a comment on your YouTube, right? Put a comment up, and then you can pursue whatever they have to say or contact them. I'm also going to put on our podcast how they can get hold of MUFON if they want to add some things that they might know, historical things. We come across people all the time who say, oh, my grandfather knows all about that. It's amazing. It's so closely connected, the community sometimes. So, as you know, obviously, I've watched your YouTube, and I've started reading all the documents. I'm a very busy guy as a national director, but I am going to be following this like you wouldn't believe. So don't be surprised if I pick up the phone and call you about something.
Definitely
want to talk to your sister. I want somebody up there. It's all there is to it, Mikey. So I am so happy you're going back. And yes, the magnetometer is going to tell you if there's something in that lake that shouldn't be there, obviously metal. We got some other ideas we'll talk about another time. Even 60, 70, 80 years later, we've been finding that if it was a vehicle, let's say, from out of this Earth, there are the possibilities that there's still energy available, and because, you know, we don't know how they produce things or what's their energy source. And we have some ideas of how you could possibly could detect some energy, too, not magnetic, but some energy readings. And we'll be talking about that offline. Jason and I will discuss that, and he'll pass it on to you. But there's all sorts of things you can do, and I'm really excited that you're willing to go back. I hope you do solve it, and actually I hope it turns out to be something not of this world. And then it'll be on the front page of the New York Times, as you said. It's the end of the story, but Mikey McBrien solved it, and not too many people have the opportunity to go up and do this, you know. Now, mind you, you had a big team. You had a lot of people there. I was impressed how many people actually went up there. And camping. Yeah, I love camping, and I'm up there in age, but boy, camping is still fun any time you can do it. So this is great. Is there anything else you want to add to it? Like, we're all going to be sitting on pins and needles for your next YouTube with the next, updates and stuff. But if you ever wanted to broadcast out anything through us, feel free to send it to me and I'll broadcast it up. You know, we have like 7,000 people on our Facebook page. We have 3,000 or 4,000 emails that people are saying, broadcast me anything that's, you know, breaking news. But I will not be putting Joe Biden's win up, which happened today. So everybody knows what day we shot this on. Biden won the election today. This is really exciting news. I'm so pleased that people are investing Canadian cases. There's too much hype about U.S. cases in Brazil and, Chile and all that. So that's MUFON's goal, is to try and bring some education to whoever's watching and understanding. And yeah, there's a lot happening around the world, not just down south, but around the world. And we're part of it. And we've had our own Roswell, which was Shag Harbor. You know, we've had some interesting cases up here, and actually they're all on a Wikipedia of Canadian, historic Canadian cases, and Clan Lake's on there now too, I noticed. So yeah, so it made the paper, and probably, as you said, that reporter brought it up. So, wow. I can't wait for you to report again and go up and have another good time up there. I assume you're going to stay maybe a little longer this time.
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, we were actually, a lot of, you know, documentaries play the rush part. Like, oh, we got it. I was literally, that was our only time off, and to have everybody, you know, be able to go out there in the airplanes and all that stuff. So again, we got it. We got the mapping, and there's actually something, if you watch the whole video right to the end, when I was back reviewing the drone footage, because I had my own little drone out there, we did spot something in the lake, so you gotta check that out if you watch right to the end. Little teaser, as they say in the...
I didn't want to give that away. They gotta watch it, because I saw that.
You gotta go watch it.
He's doing the real teaser thing here.
One thing I gotta mention really quickly is my sister actually sent me this picture here of this MUFON patch. I don't know if you can see
that's the star team, which I have part of the strike team area research. And I'll announce it here right now. My whole team doesn't know it, but Jason Kerrigan, our National Chief Investigator, was promoted to a star investigator just yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I promoted him. Oh. Yeah. That gives him the ability and more access to more things if he were to, you know, head up. So in Canada, we have three now star field investigators. And as it says, the strike team area research, where the guys were willing to hop in a car, hop in a helicopter, hop in a plane, hop in a boat, whatever it takes to go to an actual confirmed sighting, or in this case, a confirmed, you know, you found something or you want to find something. So I did promote Jason basically on the work he's done on a lot of cases in Canada. He supports all our field investigators to assist them when he gets stuck or they have questions. Every one of our field investigators has some sort of little, you know, subject matter expert thing. And we promote that. So Jason, I think I have a drone, you know, they contact Jason. But Jason supports all the FIs as the chief investigator. So he was deserving it. And yeah, I'm happy to actually talk about it right now, because I haven't even announced it to the rest of the team, but he's now a star member. So fitting if he goes up there, because he would have to have that level. So you're part of that. That's the other reason I did promote him too. One of the reasons. So.
Oh, geez. Well, that's awesome. It's funny because my sister was watching, it was called the Alaskan Triangle.
Yeah.
And she actually sent me that. She sent me the picture here of her watching it. And she's like, what's that patch?
Yeah, I have one of those on my coat.
It's like it says MUFON on it. I got to ask the MUFON guys.
But, there's not too many star field investigators at that level. There's only a few, you know, certain states have one here and there, you know. And you have to be doing it for a long time. You have to really know what you're doing. You have to have the scientific method down pat so that we don't miss things and we don't jump to conclusions. I mean, what makes a good investigator, which is exactly what you're doing, is the open mind. You're up there to totally find what the truth is without making any preconceived ideas and no conclusions before you even start. And if you can't do that, you can't be a star investigator, because, you know, you really got to have an open mind. It's got nothing to do with your background and your training, although there's extra training to become a star investigator. But there is, it doesn't matter if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a housewife, mine worker, it doesn't matter. You know, it's our minds. It's how we operate, you know. But anyways, yeah, this is I hope you can get up there. I hope your sister becomes a field investigator so I can come up and visit.
How many MUFON Canada members totally is there?
Well, as our team members, our actual investigators, we are 52 strong right now, with 14 more joining. There's 500 in the U.S., so basically 10% of population, 10%. Now, we weren't for a long time. I've only managed to increase that this year in 2020. Being stuck in for many months myself, working at home, I took the opportunity to really increase our numbers. So we have 52 in the team. It was 51 Wednesday, but I got a new one who passed on Thursday, so that's 52. And like I said, 14 more coming. So we've got quite a strong team for 36 million people. We're doing good, you know, like one tenth of the U.S. But we have a lot more territory to cover, you know, the entire country.
But there's also too, like the members part, right? There's
the members, like, we have about 300 or 400 paid members. It's $25 a year. You get a quarterly magazine. You get blasts out for, you know, things like this. When this podcast goes up, I'll be blasting it out to everybody to go and watch it and encourage them to watch yours. Yeah, but we could use a 1,000. That would be nice. And of course, we're pushing people to subscribe on our YouTube channel, just so that it gets known and gets up there in the rankings. But we're only about 1,100 people because we only started basically this year. We grew up pretty quick, but you know, we're only about 1,100 subscribers now. We definitely need to increase that. And
so there's the different levels. So if you want to be part of it, you could, you know, $25, you could be just a member. Yeah. You get the newsletter and all that stuff, and be a part, you know.
Yeah, we don't have, not like the U.S., we don't have any tiered membership. You don't, like, suddenly give us more money to get something more, because we just give you everything we can. We do have a lot of people say, look, I really want to help because you've got expenses, because it's all volunteer. There is no funding. FIs have to pay their own way to go places, to do things. We have our web costs, our email costs, our distribution costs. All that is done with that little $25, and, of course, we're starting to lose. And there was two people, I won't mention the names, who were basically fronting that every year and then never getting it back. So we do need to recover our membership and grow it a bit. We will be selling hats. I know I'm not on live, but I have these are the Canadian hats. They're $35, but shipping's ridiculous because it costs about $15 to $20 to ship a hat. It's ridiculous. And we have our Alien Cosmic Expo in Toronto every year, except for this year because of COVID. It'll hopefully be back next year, and we get about 1,500 people coming through that weekend to listen to the famous, Canadian ufologists like Grant Cameron, and then we get Nick Popes and Richard Dolans and Linda Moulton Howell, and all these people come up and do talks. And last year we had Randy Kramer, the guy who says he's been to Mars, and he's very convincing, by the way, and he hasn't changed his story ever. And of course, Travis Walton has come up a couple times, and we chat one-on-one all the time. He's another guy who has an incredible story, never changed it, passed the lie detectors, and, you know, like, it's not a joke, people have to realize. And with the New York Times saying, yeah, we do have a craft that's not from this world, or vehicle not made on this world, then yeah, like wake up, this is for real. These sightings that you're seeing, they're not, a lot of them are other things. I mean, we used to be running 5%. So if you take 100,000 cases, which we have probably twice that in all the different databases, if you take 5% that are truly unknowns, that's still a lot of numbers. But right now we're running 8 to 9% because people are becoming more aware. They're stuck at home. They're being a little bit more observant. We love winter, by the way. I was out on my back porch having a smoke. Man, I love smokers because they look up at night, you know. We get more reports from people out in the back.
Yeah, and it's important for people to realize too. If you don't believe in anything that is not of this world, there is. If you look at Roswell, like I said, they did have a cover up story.
Yeah.
Again, it could have been some guy rolled his Jeep in the bush, but they covered it up.
The fact that there was a cover up that tells you something, right?
And if you look at Area 51. And you do the research with Kelly Johnson and Lockheed, which I recommend anybody to do.
Yep.
If you've never heard of the name Kelly Johnson and you like Area 51, then you need to do some more work. But that right there is, you'll learn so much about just the day-to-day life of how did they eat, the cafeteria. These are actual things, because people really get stuck in the storm Area 51 and, you know, the little green guys and all that stuff. These are real stories, folks. These are real things. I'm not talking about the UFOs. I'm talking about the airstrip and the testing. And there's the stories about having the testing, and they knew when the Russian satellites were coming over, so they had to move the aircraft into the hangars when they knew the Russian satellites were coming in. And then the Russians, they knew that the Russians knew the shape of the SR-71 Blackbird, and they couldn't figure out how did they know the shape. Well, the Russians put in heat sensing imaging into their satellites. So when they went over Area 51, when the Blackbird left the ramp, it's still, that part of the ramp was cooler because of the sun, and they got the outline of the airplane.
Of course, yeah.
These, actual stories. And these, like, the biggest secret they had at Area 51 was the stealth technology at the F-117 Nighthawk.
Yeah.
And, like, the Have Blue projects, like, research. This is real stuff. So you, there's a whole spectrum. You can be crazy, or you could be, you know, an avionics engineer or an aeronautics engineer. And anywhere in that spectrum, mm-hmm. there's a place for you.
Oh, so yeah.
I highly, highly recommend it. The one thing I really wanted to, you mentioned a bunch of names. What about Richard Doty? Does he ever do any of this stuff?
Haven't had him at any of our conferences. He wrote a book a little while ago, didn't he?
Because if you guys know, you probably know Richard Doty's misinformation guy. He's the guy who says, you know, 80% is made up, 20% is real, blah, 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 and all that stuff. You learn a lot from these type of people. A lot of people demonize people that put out misinformation. Mm-hmm. But again, these are their jobs. So you actually learn a lot from misinformation people, especially marketing people.
Oh, of course.
If you ever want to get the inside scoop on anything, marketing.
Yeah. I have to fight with debunkers all the time and prove them wrong, of course, because they don't judge they make their statements based on no facts. It's almost like what's going down in the States right now with this voter fraud. There's no facts. There's no proof. And one of our famous cases, which was in Squamish, B.C., with an orb with Rob Freeman, you know, they were... The debunkers came out of the woodwork, literally, is this, and we fought off every single one of them, and actually had a couple of people turn around and actually say, well, I guess I was wrong, you know, like, which is incredible to get a debunker to admit he was wrong. But that was a very famous case a few years ago, and that's an orb that was anywhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 8 feet in diameter. Most people see 1 foot orbs, you know, this was huge. You should look that one up, the Squamish BC orb. So it's funny, you know, when people talk to me about ufology and stuff, I'll ask them one basic little question that is, you know, do you want to believe or do you believe? And by the time people look in, research, and educate themselves, they come back and say, I do believe. And that's what we're trying to get people to understand and change mm-hmm. their mind. This is not the X-Files Hollywoodized, you know, I want to believe. This is the true life, what's going on, and yeah, and hopefully you are one of the ones that say, I do believe. Because
I'm still like, I'm always on the fence.
Yeah.
And that's why like the Trump Biden thing like that.
Yeah.
I don't, because I guess I've been in the public eye with the TV show. You're not really allowed to have polarizing opinions.
Nope. I'm the head of MUFON in Canada. I have to be on the fence all the time, but that's a healthy skepticism.
It's kind of funny. It's like the people that do well, being in the public eye and on television and that kind of stuff are the type of people that can look at either thing. They're not the ones out there saying pro Trump or pro Biden and stuff.
Yeah.
The people that actually can sit there and look both sides is something that has longevity in any form of media. And you can show that, like, your favorite movie stars that are still going are because they are not that polarizing.
Right, you're right.
Once you get very political on either end, you go, you know, you get hung out to dry. So I would love to say that, you know, I am convinced that Ancient Aliens? It's I'm not saying it was aliens. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah,
I'm right there. I'm right there that I like listening to Bob Lazar. I got a signed picture of Bob Lazar. Ordered from United Nuclear. So if I go to United Nuclear and order a signed picture of Bob Lazar, that does tell you something.
Yeah, you're trending.
But I'm also looking at the actual logistics of Area 51 and what they were doing and what they still are doing to this day. They're going to be soon releasing a sixth generation fighter that they would be testing at Area 51 mm-hmm. that they've built secretly to actually eclipse the F-35 and F-22 programs. And this is real, folks. They've been secretly testing a whole new generation of fighter aircraft that no one knows about. They're going to be releasing it very, very soon, just like they did with the Blackbird, the F-117, the B-2, the U-2. All these airplanes came out of nowhere. We have an airplane that's coming out. Is it the Tic Tac? Is it just the SR-71?
We
don't know.
We don't know.
But we don't know. And until they know, it could be anything. And that's the exciting part for me. And that's exciting about a client like, too. It could be anything. And you got to have these things. And, you know, like you said, Roswell, New Mexico is being trampled to death. Mm-hmm. Every square inch of that place is being, you know, tweeted and pictured and stomped, baked and all that stuff. Clan Lake is a virgin story, and it's there for the taking, and it's in my bubble, so it couldn't have been perfect.
No, it's perfect. In fact, as I really do wish you success, and hopefully you'll be reporting back on a conclusion, because that's what we're real after. This is not a TV show documentary that you need 10 seasons on. Are they up to that far? I haven't mentioned the one I'm talking about, but you probably know who I'm talking about out east. But anyways, I love the show because it's entertainment. I really do hope you solve it, and I hope we'll keep in touch. It's nice to have an aviation subject matter expert. Maybe we can use your services. You obviously have a great understanding of aviation. It's in your blood, your family, your background, everything. That's fantastic. I'd love to see ICE pilots come back at one time, but you know, you got to be out there making money and not just waiting around for shooting shows. I know the flip side of that's all about too. So anyways,
On the flip side, I'm very interested in this Black Triangle. I don't know much about it. And I just recently have been hearing about the Black Triangle, you know, the triangle with the lights on each one, on each thing. Now that is an aircraft. Like that is something that people are filming, regardless if it's from Zeta Reticula or if it's from New Hampshire. It is something in the sky that people are filming, and it's an aircraft. So I'm very interested. If anybody is a subject expert on these black triangles, I'd love to learn more. Is it a drone? Is it a mapping drone? Is it a spy airplane? Is it a couple kids with drones?
I will keep you informed as we produce reports throughout MUFON International on the supposedly anti-gravity driven black triangle. And we have thousands of reports.
So, black triangles, folks, there's something there, and that might be the new aircraft that Lockheed is going to be announcing here pretty soon.
That would be nice.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, exactly. And on all that note, thank you very, very much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. I look forward to more. Jason and I will be in touch, and I'm sure we'll get them out there, and hopefully the ice will be off the lake sooner than later if we have a mild winter. Of course, that's Toronto. I don't know about up there. You talk about May. You're still iced up in May. Anyways, I love
you. Yeah, where's ice up to June?
Yeah, June and July, June. Yeah.
Look out for my sister, Kathy McBride. She'll be registering here soon. And, we'll see. We can get boots on the ground here in the Northwest Territories, Yukon, and possibly Nunavut. Who knows?
That would be great. Tell her. You got my email address. Send it to her. And my number. I'll send you my phone number if she wants to call. Anyways, great pleasure. Always a pleasure, Mike. You're welcome anytime. We'll keep you updated on a couple things. Jason will be getting back in touch with you. And again, I'm going to say it one last time. I hope you find something, no matter what it
we
is.
We all do.
We all want you to find something.
That should be MUFON's catchphrase. Let's find something.
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
See you guys.